Welcome back to Supporting Both Ends of the Lead. I'm Caroline, a certified animal behaviourist.
And I'm Dr. Linda Blair, a clinical psychologist.
We're here to bring you today's double dose of well-being for you and your dog.
And it's time to get started, don't you think? Today, what we thought would be quite good is to talk about relationships in a larger context rather than concentrating entirely on the content of any relationship you have. What makes a community? What makes us feel connected? What is it that defines home? Because home is so much more than just a place. It's a connection. So that's what I'd like to talk about, and I'm going, Caroline, can I hog it at the beginning and start?
Absolutely, you carry on.
Because I'm very excited to introduce you all to Robin Dunbar, not really, but in terms of looking him up. Robin Dunbar, he's a professor of anthropology and now psychology, because the psychologists grabbed him. Convinced him to be a psychologist as well, because his work is so psychological. He's at Oxford. And in the 1980s, he was studying primates. He wasn't studying people, but he was wondering about why sizes of their community, of their troop or their pack or whatever, you know, type of animal they are, why is it such a stable number? Why is it the size it is? And he found, interestingly, that it relates to the size of their cortex, which is the front part of our brain, which does our planning and makes us feel safe when we can predict things. So it all goes with having friends, doesn't it? Because when we have friends, we feel safe and we feel part of a group which is stronger than an individual. And he thought, you know what? I wonder if I could apply that to people. So what he did was he measured the cortex. Don't ask me how. I don't know. And did his little calculations. And he worked out that the ideal size of a community is about 150. If you want to be precise, 149.4. But I don't know about that poor 0.4. So he then began to look back in history at, you know, natural forming communities before the Industrial Revolution, when people were shoved together in larger groups, and also to communities in the world now that haven't yet been too trampled by Western values, like the Hunza and the Kung and people like that. And guess what? They were all about 149 to 150. Isn't that amazing? So I would like you, after this podcast, to have a little think about what's your society? You know, is it the school group plus work colleagues? Is it the people you encounter at the grocery? Is it your gym for other gym members if you go to a gym? Is it your dance class? Is that part of it? And you don't have to add them up precisely, but I bet you'll find to your surprise, there we are, around 150. And these are the number of people that you know, probably by name. You don't have to, but probably. But you certainly can greet each other and know that you know each other, you know, that kind of familiarity. And that's our natural community. But then within that, there are little rings of more and more important people to us. And they go by threes. So we have 150, and if you divide that by three, you get 50. Those 50 are people we would call friends. We know them, we've spent time with them, we've probably gone out to places with them, maybe we share kids in the same year. Within that, including that, within it, divide by three again, you get 15, and those are your close friends. Those are people that you know. You could call up and say, hey, my car just broke down. Can you pick up my kid at school and take care of them? My dog's at daycare and I have a flat tire. Can you go get my poor dog? And they would do it if at all possible. Within that is your most strongest group, your best friends. And that's up to about five. It depends on you, but it's a couple of people that it doesn't matter how long you haven't been in touch. It doesn't matter what you talk about when you're back together. You just know each other. Makes you sing, I always think, makes your heart sing. So if you think about that and how important that is, you also can think about how devastating the pandemic was for us socially, because that 150 ring, we missed. We didn't bump into people because we were confined. And a lot of people got very disoriented about, who am I? You know, am I a parent? I can't remember. I haven't stood at the school gates for months. Am I, what kind of a parent am I? I don't have anything to knock off against. Quite nasty. This was something that even now people are studying, because it's had some long-term effects. And it's very important, I think, to remember that and greet people and say hi and smile when you think they're, oh, that's my 150 ring. Outside of that, since the internet, we have a group of 500 to 1,500, depending on how much time you spend on social media. And all I want to say about that is that we spent more time with them during the pandemic than we usually do. And it didn't correlate with anything except rising rates of loneliness and feelings of isolation, which continue if you continue prioritizing those groups over real contact. So safely, please, but please treasure your friends. That's really the essence of what I wanted to say. And of course, there is a friend that is beyond description in our lives. And I think, Caroline, I'd like you to take over now.
Thank you, Linda. There's so many little points that we can draw out of that conversation that can so easily, as our conversations always go, be related back to dogs. That wider or slightly smaller community might include a whole bunch of dogs you know the names of, but maybe you don't know the names of their parents or owners, whatever you want to call them. There's often, we're driving around and we'll see a dog and my partner will say to me, oh, who's that? And I'll say, that's, you know, Bertie or whoever. And they're saying, who's the human? I'm like, well, they're very lovely, but I don't know their name. And we so often get to know the dogs that we see around. But maybe next time, ask for the humans' names and try and remember it for the following time you greet them. So one of the things I wanted to talk about today was just how vital the dog-human relationship is in terms of how successful a mammal are dogs are, or just dogs generally as a species are in the world. So I'm going to be focusing today around dog to human relationships. We could do a whole other episode, and I'm sure we will get there one day, on dog to dog relationships and the different types of relationships your dogs may have with each other. But today we're talking about dogs and humans. So the fact that our dogs are one of the most successful mammals, comparably to humans, on the planet is really down to the fact that they have an ability to interact with humans. They've developed skills to live alongside us. They've even developed ways to interact with us through communication, despite not speaking the same language as us. It's incredible the way that over the years, not only through the domesticated dogs that share our homes, but even through the feral dogs or village dogs, the wild dogs, have become integrated into human society. But we do have to remember that actually dogs still, for the most part, are sort of going to be most successful in terms of their relationships when they're living alongside other dogs. And actually the majority of that population of dogs on the planet are wild, so they don't live in a home. About 70% is represented by village or feral dogs.
70%?
Yeah, it's a huge
amount. Good heavens, I didn't know that. You mean over half of all dogs are wild?
Over half of all dogs don't live with humans. They live alongside them, but they don't live in a human home, which is incredible when you think about it. But you only have to look when perhaps if you're traveling out of the country that you live in and you go somewhere different. Even when I've moved from the UK to Europe, I'll see more wild dogs, more street dogs, more dogs that aren't living in a home. And they might be kind of nurtured and supported by the village and community around them, but they're not actually owned by somebody, mm-hmm. if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So I think when we're thinking about our dogs that share our homes, so the ones that we live with, they have various different relationships, but most of those relationships are ones that we control. So as Linda was saying about how we have these sort of communities and different levels of friendships or relationships that are relative to our cortex, which I think is incredibly interesting. And I love that fact that you were just talking about. Our dogs aren't naturally able to create the types of relationships they would were they wild or free roaming. Mm. And obviously we as the primary caregiver are going to be the kind of cornerstone, the center point of all of the relationships they have. And the caregiver role, our role as who are listening here to this podcast, me and Linda as dog parents ourselves, yes. It really is like being the parent of a child, because our job is to nurture them, to relieve stress, to feed them, to teach them skills, to make them feel safe. And that is what we do when we are living with other humans, particularly miniature humans.
And can I interrupt you there? I also felt you could turn that around and you could say those are all things that the dogs give us too. They do. They even teach us skills. They do, I think.
Aren't I right? Apart from feeding us, they could, you know, they might steal you,
oh, yeah.
but they're not likely to give you come back. But apart from that, they do. They provide so much for us. And I think the strength of that relationship that we have, you know, whether it be your dog has two primary caregivers or maybe multiple primary caregivers within a larger family home, or maybe whether they're really just hyper connected to one of your family, that's probably you if you're listening along today, then they really have created humans as a massive part of their world, mm-hmm. even to the point that according to the RSPCA, 85% of dogs, and that's dogs living in homes, of course, may be struggling when they're left alone. So this can be really a real kind of clear example of how strong that bond is between dogs and humans.
Does that mean we should never, ever be away from our dogs?
So that's a really good question. I think it depends on the dog is one of the things that's there. I think that we are often too eager to leave our dogs too soon. So when we welcome a new puppy or a new rescue dog into our homes, we often are all about, like, we need to start to get them to sleep in another room to us. We need to get them to be able to cope with being home alone. And those are really, really big life skills for our dogs to learn. But actually what's been shown through studies is if we create secure bonds with our dogs, dogs who have the strongest attachment even to their humans are less likely to have separation related challenges because they have that trust factor. Whereas, so if we are there and we are available to our dogs more, at least in the initial part of where we're nurturing that relationship with them, then we're actually able to then be able to create that trust factor with our dogs more easily going forward. It does mean that we have to put in a lot of work then to help support our dogs to learn the skills, to learn the way to be able to relax when they are alone. And I know alone time is something that we were talking about before we came on that's so important for us humans. Mm. It is important for our dogs to be able to do it. It's important for a couple of reasons. One is that they are going to get the best rest and sleep that they can if they are left alone, because we're not going to be coughing, typing, standing up to make a cup of tea, doing all the things that we would do during a busy day. We need to remember that our dogs need more sleep than us, and they will take that sleep throughout various parts of the day. And if when we're busy during that day, we could be interrupting their sleep at various points. So one, it's really important for the health and well-being of the dog. Two, I think it's also really important for the health and well-being of us, the humans, because we can all get a little we call it with young babies, touched out, like you are there and you're being held onto the whole time. And we can sometimes be over needed. And so by being able to go out and be a human on your own account, or go out with your partner and not have the responsibility of oh, is the dog okay in this environment or not, being able to do that, I think gives us freedom to explore all elements of our life. What do you think, Linda?
Yeah, and I also think the most important thing to me that you said in that whole interesting discussion, it isn't really a discussion because I just listened to you. I didn't want to interrupt. But there was one really important thing, which you said, dogs do need own time, just like we do. And there is such a difference between loneliness, which I mentioned earlier, and aloneness, which we do need aloneness for creativity, for regeneration within. We need some of that. But the first thing you have to do, you said, which I never thought about, is you need to create a secure bond before you start thinking separation. And, you know, in the 40s, there was a psychologist called John Bowlby who was looking at kids who'd been mistreated. I hate the word abused, so I'm going to leave that because I think it's overused now. But mistreated. And he was so surprised to find that whoever their caregiver was, even if it was the one who mistreated them, they were more clingy to that person than other kids. And that's the same thing. It's because they didn't have any other secure bond. They could only hold on to the one bond that they were hoping to have. And that's why we had this unbelievably incongruent behavior. How can you cling to him? He's not nice to you, or she's not nice to you. But that's because they were looking for that anchor. So I really go with you there. First make an anchor, then do the separating.
Yeah.
I love it.
And when we think about babies, human babies, for safety reasons, sleep safety reasons, but also for bonding, it's recommended for them to sleep in the same room as you for 6 months. Yet we try and get our puppies to sleep on their own in a cold space away from not only their mother or other siblings, but probably all the people who've been looking after them for the first sort of 8-12 weeks of their life. And now they've come into a new home with no scent attachment there, and no kind of anchor there, as you so well put it there, Linda. And yet we then go and abandon them the first night. And that's why it can be really, really hard sometimes for our dogs. And we get that sort of thing where the dogs are crying through the night, they're howling, they're feeling really distressed. And I think separation challenges with our dogs is such a complex area, and it can change throughout life. Our dogs can feel secure and feel great at certain points, and then things can change, such as perhaps the death of a family member or another dog in the household, moving home, illness, pain, things like that can change, and our dogs can suddenly need reassuring that they are safe and they have that trust factor there. But by creating that initial strong bond, that is one of the things that's so important for our dogs.
And minimizes the distress in future separations. And in fact, you, I'm afraid, have just sparked another podcast that we're going to have to do in future, which is about how to deal with separations. And I can do that in terms of parents and their children, and then not only as babies, but when they leave the nest, as it were, empty nest. And you have so much to say, I can tell, about us and our dogs, especially
Absolutely.
When they first come.
Because I would say 85% of dogs having separation-related challenges, according to the RSPCA, I would say probably 85% of humans living with dogs have separation anxiety when they leave their dog as well.
Yeah, I agree with
themselves,
you.
Particularly when they go away on holiday. It's hard. You miss them. That constant sort of space around you.
I know we're running out of time, but what I'd really like to close on is a thorny question, which could then lead us into yet another podcast, where I could talk about, is it better to raise a child as a single child or to have siblings? And I would like you to just start a little bit about, because all you were talking about, I was thinking, well, if you have two dogs, maybe that's okay. But that's so much more work. I don't know. So can you just comment broadly about the difference between a dog left alone on their own and left alone with their other household dog?
Okay, so this, I think, is a big one, and one we cannot definitely dive into again. But many people will dive out at the moment they think their dog is feeling stressed when alone, and they'll go, we'll get another dog, we'll get a cat, we'll get something else, another mammal to be in the home with them. Unfortunately, that pretty much, I'd say probably 90% of the time doesn't fix things, because separation related challenges are, they're kind of a broad spectrum of potential issues. It could be that the dog is has like FOMO, it's fear of missing out on what you're going to be getting up to. It could be that it's worried about being contained in the room or space it's in. It could be that it's got fear of being abandoned. It could be that it's got hyper attachment to the specific human. But most of those things don't have a fix by another dog being with them.
That's smart. It doesn't solve the problem. So you have to think about why am I bringing this other dog in? That's what you have to think about. And this is going to be a crackerjack podcast when we do it, because everything you said about the dogs and bringing in another dog is not what I say about siblings. It's different. So it's going to be grand fun, that. I look forward to that one.
So talking about siblings, just really quickly before we finish up, just wanted to go back onto the relationship side of things in terms of the different types of relationships our dogs have. Because as I mentioned earlier, as humans are kind of in charge of those relationships our dogs have. And this is just a little intro, because we've had a great question come in from one of our Instagram followers. You can find us at Supporting Both Ends of the Lead over on Instagram. So if you want to do that, please do come and follow us. You get lots of little snippets and extra bits that we kind of delve into here. But I wanted to talk about the different aspects of relationships, and then this specifically goes into guests. So guests and or strangers coming over to the home. So obviously we have that caregiver, family member, supporter, that nurturing member that I was talking about earlier. Then we have things like needed interactions, the ones that generally tend to be by professionals. So that might be vets, pet carers, groomers, and those can either be enjoyable interactions, or quite often those can be ones that are based around fear. Then we have other relationships that our dogs could find a little overwhelming, and that could be through overexcitement or through fear. And that can be guests and strangers that they either meet in your home or out in the world. And what's interesting, again, when we go back to the pandemic side of things that Linda was talking about earlier, is that not only did the separation related challenges, the separation anxiety, increase during lockdown for our dogs, but fear of strangers also increased during lockdown. So we've seen about a 700% rise in behavioural challenges in our dogs just in those 2 years, this sort of 2020 period, which is huge. So, busy work for me and my colleagues who are working with dogs, supporting them. I think guests is one of the things that so many people I work with have challenges. And it can be because when we invite people into our home, we want them to feel welcome, comfortable, safe, secure, happy, maybe even a little like impressed by your home, or your, you want them to feel like you've been a great host. And if your dog is letting you down, or your dog's behavior is letting you down, that can make it really hard. And it can sometimes close off the world a little bit for you. And those relationships that you would love to have, that Linda went through at the beginning, those kind of circle of 5 or 15, that those people you might invite into your home, that could suddenly mean that you're no longer able to do that if your dog is reacting in a way that is challenging to have other people over. So some of the reasons why our dogs feel uncomfortable or overwhelmed when we have guests coming over, it could be that it's a kind of a fear, stranger danger thing. It could be that they've had a history of negative treatment by humans. It could be that they just haven't got used to humans coming to their home if they were a pandemic puppy. It could be that they're actually worried about being removed by that human if they've had multiple homes and they've been kind of transported around a lot. It could obviously be that they're excited by the anticipation of attention, and particularly, you've maybe got that favourite family member who is hugely like your dog's number one fan, and they come over and all they do is spend the entire time sitting on the floor with your dog. They have anticipation of that excitement. It could also be, going back to that FOMO effect again, it could be that they're worried about missing out on your attention. So they now know that your attention is going to go somewhere else instead of onto them. And sometimes it's about forced interactions. And when our dogs feel that they're being forced into a situation that they're uncomfortable with, they often display overexcitement as well as kind of aggressive more reaction. So we sometimes can be confused and conflicted in terms of what emotion our dog is feeling when they when a guest arrives. So I hear people saying, oh, my dog's like so overexcited, they jump up all over people. But actually a dog who's worried could jump up over people because it has this kind of quandary. It doesn't know what to do. It's got all this energy in its body, but it doesn't know whether to retreat or to go and investigate. And so what happens is we get these silly fiddling about or flirting behaviours that we talk about where our dogs just act all goofy. And we think it's because it's fun, but actually it can be sometimes because there is some fear there. So, Linda, sorry, hogging the air here, but no, shall I dive into our question that we had over from one of our listeners? So Banjo and Morgan, they have been sending such great, wonderful feedback from our podcast episode so far, and we do love hearing from you. So if you do have questions, yes, feedback or comments for us at all, we would love to hear them. But they asked about encouraging calm when the doorbell goes and someone new is in the home. She started with throwing treats to the floor for guests, and the jumping up element is gone. So one of the first things that I would say to people is that we can use food as a very easy way to create space for the dogs and also to be able to kind of combat that undesirable behaviour of our dogs jumping up to greet people. Just by saying the floor is the place to hang out because food just appears there. By instructing our humans to throw food for our dogs to the floor or behind the dog, it does a couple of good things. So firstly, it means that the human has a clear way to interact with the dog rather than telling them to ignore the dog, because I'm sure Linda will agree with this. Humans are very good at being told to do things, but not very good to being told not to do things. Yeah. Any thoughts on that one, Linda?
Yeah, because when you don't do something, then you don't know what to do. So you become agitated. And if you become agitated, particularly if you're dealing with a baby, and I bet you, since you say it's parallel with a dog, they become agitated because immature beings automatically think distress of important others is their fault.
Yeah, that's great. And I think it is so important that we are clear with positive things that people can do for us to help our dogs be so successful, rather than trying to just say, don't do that, don't do that. Yeah. So by throwing the treats and giving, not only does it give the human something positive to do that's appropriate and going to be not encouraging the wrong behaviours from your dog, it also gives your dog space.
Yeah.
It means your dog doesn't have to have that forced interaction. So as I said, forced interactions can be really hard for dogs. So that's where the human guest comes in and they just reach down straight away to start fussing your dog or go, oh my gosh, aren't you so cute? And they're putting all that energy and intensity on top of a dog who already is feeling either overexcited, unsure or fearful. It can be too much. And so by creating space, that allows everyone just a bit of time before the interaction happens, whether it does or not. So one of the things though that Banjo and Morgan said is they've started doing the food throwing and that's helped with the jumping up. But visitors are just super exciting now because not only do they come in and bring the potential for interaction, but they also are bringing food into the situation. So I think what we need to first of all understand here is what are your dog's primary emotion? And we might need to do some filming over various different sessions where the humans arrive and like film your dogs and so that you can review it back. Because often we're so focused on saying hi and trying to, greet the person who's coming in or manage our dogs so that we're moving them out of the way and that we don't actually really look at what our dogs are telling us. And as I said, our dogs have developed to be able to communicate with us, but only if we're listening. So really important that we take the time to notice their body language, because it may be you think that excitement element is fun and anticipation of good stuff, but it may be that it's anticipation of something a little bit more worrying for them.
So listening means watching in that case, doesn't it? Absolutely. That's really interesting. And in another podcast, boy, we have so many today. I want to talk about understanding, reading emotions, because boy, is that interesting with humans. You guys will all be so surprised about how few emotions actually we have and how few the physiological differences. Boy, it is fascinating.
That's fab. That's really good. I love that one as a topic. So I would say move on from, first of all, watching your dogs, making sure you're understanding the emotion that's happening. Move on from your food throws and get your dog set up for success in advance. So if you know you've got guests arriving, give your dog something proactive to do. That cortex that Linda was talking about at the beginning, we can utilize it to our benefit for our dogs, moving them from the emotional side of the brain over into the thinking, processing, working on the environment side of their brain. And that can help to lower arousal. So what you could do is you could give your dog something long lasting to chew and make sure that they're really hooked into it before the guest arrives, to give it good, you know, a few minutes in advance. You could give them something to move their bodies. So you could give them a treat throw out on the lawn. I think I've already talked about the cheese party before, which is grated cheese thrown all over your lawn. Or you could set up a free work area. And that's something where we create a little doggy obstacle course full of yummy bits of food for our dogs to explore and investigate. So they've got a way to use some of that energy by either sniffing, licking, chewing, all things that are really nice and calming for your dog, but it also means that they're able to get rid of that energy in an alternative space to your visitor arriving. And then once your visitor's there and they're sat down and everything's a bit calmer, then you can encourage your dog to come in and ask the humans again to just throw the treats to, or just to focus on talking to you, or whatever it is, in a way that you can help the humans to be less intense for that.
Well, isn't it true that direct eye contact with a mammal, I was always taught when I did my zoology, that is often interpreted as a threat.
Yeah, and I think for some dogs, obviously all dogs are different. Some dogs are a lot more social than others and can cope with eye contact, and in fact even invite it, and they see it as almost rewarding.
Okay.
But for some dogs, they do have that mammal response of eye contact is a threat. And so by breaking eye contact, and that's why often also asking the humans to throw a treat, say, to your dog's bed and say, can you throw it there? Because your human is then putting their eye focus because they want to get it right and they don't want to look, you know, silly by missing the mark. So they, by looking at a target, you've got them to break eye contact. So that can be another really neat little trick to use.
You're making me laugh, because you know what? The best way to get your teenager to calm down and be likely to want to talk to you, you do not look at them. You don't throw a treat. I wouldn't recommend that. But you do a task together. You take a walk together. You drive them somewhere. You cook dinner together. You eat dinner together. But you don't stare at them and let's have a talk. Doesn't work.
That's fantastic. Yeah, there's just so many similarities, aren't there, between our relationships, between us and our dogs and us and our people.
I always see this sort of skein of threads of yarn, and they get thicker and thicker as our podcast goes on, you know, till we've designed something.
Oh, I love that analogy. That's perfect.
Okay, what's our one thing?
So my just one thing today is to really listen to what your dog is trying to say when they're greeting new people, giving your dog space to be able to communicate with you so that you can really see what it is that they're feeling.
That's a good one. For me, it's cherish your circles of friendship, all the different ones for all the different reasons, but most especially 150 down.
Oh, that's fantastic. Thank you so much, everybody, for tuning in again, for joining us this month of love and relationships. But until next time, thank you so much for listening. And please do keep us posted with any questions, comments, or feedback. We'd love to hear from you.
And if you're on a dog walk, I hope the sun's shining.